My name's M. I'm a compulsive overeater and recovering cynic, and I requested to speak at this meeting because on Sunday it will be 2 years of abstinence for me. So I wanted to celebrate that by thinking about and telling you my story. Let's get the physical details out of the way. I am maintaining 120-pound weight loss, and I will attempt to share a photo with you. Been a while since I did this. Okay. This is, can you see this? Thumbs up if you can see this. Okay. This is me about right about when I started in recovery. And I'm trying to see this. It's hard for me to see. Let me move this. Just give me 2 seconds. And about through 3 weeks ago, this picture was taken. So you can see the transformation in both physically and in just my happiness level. So, all right. So now I got to figure out how to unshare this. Yep, I have done this. Okay, so I see your pictures, but I don't see me.
You should have a red stop sharing at the top of the page.
Oh, I do. Perfect. Thank you so much. I am a teacher and I did it a ton during the pandemic, but I think I've forgotten it on purpose. So anyway, where to start? Let me just give you a few details about my life now. I am married, I'll be celebrating my 21st wedding anniversary, to my darling, in June, the end of June. I have an amazing 17-year-old daughter who is a high school college junior. No, high school junior. And I'll be talking some about her and my story. I am one of four kids. I'm the eldest of four children. The picture, my after picture was with my baby sister who I work with, and she is also in recovery. So we share that journey together. So it's a really huge blessing to have that in my life. I had a pretty happy childhood. Everybody has stuff. But a lot of that isn't what I want to share today. But I do want to share the very first moment I ever remember taking my first compulsive bite. I was five. It was back in the day when there was hold on, I want to stop my own. I'm like obsessed with my own image, right? Isn't that so recovery? So unrecovered. Anyway, so I just hid myself view. Okay, so now I can settle. Okay, so I went to morning kindergarten, and it was right before spring break, and my bus driver gave me a yellow peep, and I'd never had one before, and I bit into it, and in my memory, no exaggeration, everything around me is black and white except that goodie, and it was the bright color, and I bit into it, and it's like my world exploded. And I was hooked in that moment. Like I said, I had a great childhood. So, I mean, food was never really an issue. I mean, we were poor when I was growing up, yada, yada. But I am going to fast forward to when I graduated from high school. I was young. I graduated at 17. I didn't really want to go away to college. My parents and siblings had gone out on a houseboat, so I was kind of on my own. I was working one of the many jobs that I've interviewed for and gotten that I wasn't qualified to do. And I realized that there was a cafeteria line that I could go through as many times as I wanted to. And I ate 14 grilled cheese sandwiches. And I could have eaten more, but they shut the cafeteria line down. And I remember thinking that the people behind the counter would not realize that I had eaten that many sandwiches, that I'd gone through the line 7 times because you could get 2 sandwiches at a time. Now there are 40 people at this camp. They obviously knew that I walked the line that many times. But that was when the denial really started for me. And I went to camp. I graduated at, well, I'm currently, I think right now I'm around 164. I haven't weighed myself in a couple months. But I was 180 when I graduated from high school. Beautiful young girl. And by the time I left that camp, I was 230, 2 months.
The first five.
Thank you. So, all right. This is why I needed that. Thank you so much. So it just started then. And then as I'm thinking through, I've lived a lot of different places. Every place I've lived, I've had a favorite food, not a favorite memory. I did a semester of graduate work in Pennsylvania. I grew up in New York State, so Pennsylvania. Then I moved to Minnesota, and then I moved to back to New York, and then I moved to South Carolina. Then I moved to Indiana, where I got married, and then we moved to Florida, and then we moved to Missouri. Then we moved to Alaska. Then we moved back to Florida, and then we moved to South Carolina again, and then now we're in New York. And there has been a legitimate need for every one of those moves. But like I said, I don't have memories. I have food that I can think back. So, all right, let me take a drink of my tea. So when I was praying about, when I was thinking about how I wanted to do this, the way it came out was a little unique. So we'll see how it goes. Basically, I'm going to give you a little nugget about what it was like and what it's like now. So I started going to meetings in January of 2020 at the request of my therapist. And, I came into program and got a sponsor in May and got abstinent May 15th and have been abstinent ever since. Abstinence for me is no sugar, no artificial sweetener, and no butter. Before I came in, I remember every night I went to bed disgusted with the fat on my body, desperately vowing that tomorrow would be a different day. And the only difference would be my choice. I would either binge or I would restrict. Like, those were my two options. And normally it started out with a restriction, two pieces of dry toast for breakfast. And by the end of the day, I was eating a full family size package of my favorite goodie. I know that's a very familiar story in this room. Now, today, I have a very unique eating plan, and I call it the dog food food. I used to call it the dog food diet, but I realized I don't want to call it that. And basically, I eat the same thing every day. I have the same breakfast, same lunch, a few varieties for dinner. But for me, the big thing is that I love and enjoy everything that I eat. Every bite in my mouth is something that I love. I look forward to what I eat, and I am satisfied with what I eat. I don't spend a lot of time hungry, because for me, if I'm hungry, I'm going to binge. So that is something that I just don't do. I spoke about my husband. His name is Matt. And before I came into program, and actually as recently as, 3 months ago, maybe 6 months ago, everything was his fault. Every problem in our marriage is his fault. And he needed to grovel at my feet since I decided I was going to put up with his nonsense and stay. Total crap. I can remember standing in a gas station parking lot where he dared to question something that I would do. And I slammed my hands on the hood of the car. Now, keep in mind, my daughter was in the car and my husband was in a different car. He wasn't doing what I wanted to do. I can't even remember what it was that he wasn't doing. I slammed my hands on the hood of the car. I got in the car and peeled out of the parking lot. I mean, that is just one example of the way that I have treated this man. And that, yes, he has a side of the street in this. He does. But honestly, as we learn in program, it's none of my business. He's a delight. He's my biggest champion. I love him so much, and I am so grateful for program, because I would have lost him without that. And I would have been miserable if I had lost him. Every feeling, what it was like before, every feeling I had was allowed to run over me and everyone around me. I have a mental health disorder. And, I'm just gonna be brave and say it. I have bipolar type 2, and,
5 minutes.
Thank you. And, but even in the reason I tell you that is because in recovery, I finally decided that I was worth getting that taken care of. And I got brave and I changed psychiatrists and I owned my diagnosis, which you just saw is still troubling because it feels like bipolar is still one of those things that people can make fun of. Like if someone is, you know, happy, sad, oh, they're so bipolar. I'm asking you to please stop doing that if you're doing that, because that's not what it's like to have bipolar. It's much longer swings. But being in recovery, I fought. I got my own. I got a new shrink. I got the right medicine, which is making a huge difference. And I worked really hard in therapy, including firing my therapist 2 weeks ago. What it was like is you were either my enemy or my best friend. I would tell you pre-program, I would tell you intimate details about my life, hoping that you would tell me intimate details of your life, and then you wouldn't or couldn't leave me. My biggest fear was being abandoned. And I desperately needed to hold these people close to me because if they left, then I was nothing. Was completely, and I mean completely, focused outward. Now I've learned to wait, to pay attention to people, to give them an opportunity to show me who they really are, and then develop relationships with them. And then when I get in the relationships with people, I'm allowed to change my mind. Like I remember being in program about 2 weeks and this woman at this meeting that I've attended faithfully since I came in said, I'm allowed to change my mind. And I was like, I can't believe that. Like I can literally make a decision and then change my mind. And this ties into another, what it was like for me. The nanosecond I caught wind of a potential hurt, like there's even a smallest chance you were going to hurt me, you were dead to me. Done. And honestly, I still struggle with this. This is an unrecovered part of my life. Because again, abandonment is my biggest fear. And I just, healing hasn't come from that. Let's see. Oh yeah. This is one. I had to be in total control of everything. Like totally the guy behind the curtain, managing everything. And if something was wrong, I had to fix it or change it or them. I mean, I was the one that like, if something was wrong at the store, I would be the one that went to tell the manager. If there was something like even as simple, I don't know why I want to tell you this, but like if I went into a stall, like a bunch of stalls needed the toilet to be flushed, I was the one that would go and flush all those toilets because I just wanted to manage everyone. I wanted everyone to be happy around me. And it would piss me off when people would tell me I couldn't do that. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm the one that's going to prove to you that you're wrong about that. I will make everyone around me happy. One of the things that my parents always said about me is that I was, my mom had to buy the book in the 70s, The Strong-Willed Child. I stood on my parents' bed when I was 4 years old in my favorite dress. I jumped on the bed and stood up and I told them at four, I will be attending school in the fall. I mean, that's just the kind of person I am, like strong will. You will bend to my will. And I always thought that that was a good thing, that there wasn't, you know, that I was, you know, I told myself this story that all I did was pour myself out for other people and that I was the constant victim. And that just isn't true. I did a lot of good in my life, but I was also incredibly manipulative. How am I doing time-wise, Gloria?
You've got 5 minutes and 38 seconds left.
Perfect. Okay. Because there's two more things that I wanted to talk about to close up. One of the things, there are two things that I wanted to close with. One is that what I thought before I came into program, actually, I was 3 months into program when I found out that my daughter had not been kept safe. And this is what I've worked hard on how to say this because I want to protect her. When I found out about this, I thought that my brokenness had destroyed my daughter. I didn't keep her safe because I thought she was safe. She wasn't. And someone I trusted acted very badly. It was a coworker and a friend of mine. And like I said, I found that out 3 months into program. And I can be sad about it now. She's doing remarkable. Before this happened, you know, she was all the things you'd want, right? School president, straight A student on the softball team. And then when we moved here to get it, because we knew something was wrong. So we moved away from South Carolina. We went into the guidance counselor's office and said, what do we need to do just to get her to graduate from high school? And now she is on track to be salutatorian or valedictorian, on student government, working at the nursing home as a CNA, about to go to prom. I mean, it's been remarkable. But what I've had to come to for me is that I was tricked too. All three of us are healing and have learned a lot and we're closer. But don't you think for a minute that this tragedy is wrapped up with a golden bow. It isn't. It sucks. And we all wear scars. And most days I want to put my hands around this man's throat and throw him up against the wall. But, and this is where recovery comes in, we are okay. It's not great. It's never going to be great, but we're okay. And finally, I want to talk about higher power. When for 25 years of my life, I served as a professional worker in a particular religion. And I thought I had a great love affair with God. Nope. After this happened, I realized, excuse my language, I fucking hated him. I felt that I had given so much that he should have kept my daughter safe, and he didn't, so he could F off. The concept of a higher power has been the hardest part of this program for me. I believe there is a power greater than me. I believe intuitive thoughts come from this power. I've seen this more and more. This is really recent in my recovery. But honestly, I don't always believe that this energy, this presence can keep me safe. But I have to tell you what happened. As I was preparing this, awesome, perfect. As I was preparing this, I was writing in my journal. And this little tiny, I was outside, this little tiny green caterpillar like came on my journal. And this is what I wrote. But I just had a super tiny green caterpillar crawl across my page. I tried a few different ways to get it to safety. And finally, just put a leaf right in front of it. And then it crawled on the leaf. And then I transferred it to safety. And OA is the leaf that God used to save me, maybe. And finally, I just want to tell you the story. I'm a daddy's girl. And my dad passed away. It'll be a year ago, the end of June. I know that I'm in a meeting with people who have lost their dads recently. We had a celebration of life for him. And I decided to lead that celebration of life. So I stood up in front. I led it. And then we had a big old potluck afterwards with 40 people. And I went into my brother's kitchen. I heated up my little dog food, you know, my same old lunch. Sat down at the table and I was reconnecting with two girls that I was friends with in high school. Perfect. And I was talking and I was laughing and I looked over and I put my hand on my husband's leg and then I something pink caught the corner of my eye and I looked at my friend's plate next to me and I'm like, all right, there's other food here. Completely forgotten the food. Complete. And I'm not lying to you, friends. Completely forgot the food and was completely focused on the people. And on that moment, and I'm going to tell you right now, I traveled to South Carolina to say goodbye to my dad, abstinently. I went through that celebration of life abstinently. I have had several health scares and I've been abstinent. And I want to tell you, the only reason I'm able to do that is one day at a time. If I want to eat, I'm going to eat it tomorrow, not today. And today, I am abstinent. Thank you for letting me share.